There should be words more eloquent than thank you, words that communicate the great satisfaction I feel that the Newbery Committee has chosen Sarah Plain and Tall for the Newbery Medal. One of my children informed me rather pointedly that there are close to 100 words for snow in Eskimo, implying that I too ought to be able to find precise, meaningful words of my own. However, thank you seems just right for this book that is as plain and simple as thank you. And because I have never forgotten my third grade teacher's rule that every story must have a beginning, a middle, and an end, and I suppose a speech must follow the same rule, I would like to add my appreciation here for those people who have, in one way or another, had great influence on my beginnings as a writer. Thank you, Craig Verdon, for bringing out both the worst and the best in me, and for knowing that both parts translate into words. Thank you, Jane Yolen, for luring me into the world of children's literature. Every writer should have a loving reader who has the courage to write both I Love This and Ugh on the same page. Thank you, Natalie Babbitt, for offering bare-boned advice and honest and true friendship. When I asked Natalie what I should say today, she replied, "Say anything, just don't natter on." That is both advice and friendship. A child reader offered the same wisdom when he wrote, "Congratulations, I know you have to write a speech. Try, if you can, not to be boring." Last, thank you to my extended family at Harper and Row, particularly Charlotte Zolotow, who has in ways both wise and sly allowed and encouraged me to pull this story out into the light where I could see it well enough to write it. I wanted to write a beautiful speech full of truths that would astonish you all, and I set about reading the writings of others, those who have won a medal and those who have not. After all, we are only a breath apart. The truths I found have all been told, spoken by thoughtful, articulate writers and lovers of children's literature. "Why is an idea always better in your head than on paper?" a small boy once asked me. Wise child. Edith Wharton, I told him, said the same thing when she wrote, "I dream of an eagle, I give birth to a hummingbird." If that is the way of books, it is just as true of the writing of the speech, which is every bit as difficult to write as any book. With a fervent hope that there is not one thing wrong with a hummingbird, then, that is what you'll get, a hummingbird of a speech. It has also occurred to me that it would be unseemly to write a Newbery acceptance that is longer than the book for which the award is given. My daughter Emily, at age 5, said what is closest to what I feel now. Children often do, when on the hottest of summer days she put on winter clothes to go out and play. "Why?" I asked her. "It's much too warm." "Because," she told me matter-of-factly, her hand on the door, "wearing these clothes makes me feel joyish." A child's truth. Wearing the clothes of the Newbery makes me feel joyish, too, though I'll admit the outfit is made up of layers, many of which are well-worn, some new and unfamiliar, like gold lamé draped on a dime-store dummy. And although those who know me well know that I am uncomfortable talking about myself, except after sodium pentothal or several glasses of wine, I would like to tell you about the roots of this story, in the process of which you will probably know more about me than you care to know. When I learned that I had won the Newbery, it was after lunch with friends, not my best time of day, even though my fortune cookie was the only one with a prophetic message. It said, "Your talents will soon be recognized." Honest, it did. I will carry it with me always so that when I am in the middle of a book or a speech where I am always convinced that I am tedious or dull or self-conscious, I will remember that once upon a time I was talented. My best time of day as a writer, not as a parent, is between 5:30 and 8 in the morning, when I make what at the time seemed to me to be the most startling observations. The observations, mind you, that later as I write them become as common as the odd glass of water, the coffee dregs, the garbage of the day, those things, surprise or no surprise, that are what life and literature are made up of. The sunrise and I are close friends. We are well connected. Good word, connection. For if I feel connected to the sunrise, I am even more connected to childhood. Once, when I was young, I had a dream that the sun did not rise because I had overslept. Ah, the wonderful self-centeredness that is allowed, that is necessary in childhood, suspicious in adulthood. Dare I admit that I have had the same dream as an adult? You bet I do. My daughter gave me permission when she exclaimed one day, "When are we grown up anyway?" when indeed. E.L. Konigsberg, writing in Celebrating Children's Books, confesses to the same thing after describing a trip to New York after winning the Newbery. But because I retain this ability to see myself as the center of the universe, I can write for children. And because the adult part of me can see how absolutely ridiculous I am when I'm doing it, my writings are readable. I wonder if there really is that adult part of me, for every morning as the sun comes up, I crash downstairs, first one up, to clamp myself against the kitchen sink and watch the sun come up over the hills. It does not seem ridiculous. It is serious business. At the moment that Dudley Carlson of the Newbery Committee told me of the ward, I was articulate and adult, you can ask her. I was, however, at the same moment touched by a curious, childlike sense of immortality, much like one of my children who asked one day if I could please see to it that he be buried standing up, as if he might one day walk right out of the situation. When I said I would probably die before him, he did not seem terribly perturbed. These thoughts of immortality surfaced later in the week when I was being interviewed. "What would you like written on your tombstone?" asked the interviewer. I leaned forward. "Do you mean I'm going to die?" I asked. I think I was kidding. Definitely the gold lame part of the outfit. What I remember most, what fit best, was that as I spoke to Dudley and Liz Gordon and Charlotte Zolotow, our dog Hilly was nosing her dish around the floor 3 hours ahead of time, as always. My son Jamie was waiting for me to continue an absurd, ongoing 19-year-old game of who can touch whom last, which has no rules except that I lose and laugh about it and find myself lurking behind doors like a fool. My husband Bob was there where he had always been, and there was a red-breasted nuthatch on the bird feeder. I knew that if I called our oldest son John, he would burst into tears of excitement. I did, and he did. And so did joyous Emily. And I thanked them all, even the nuthatch who has been at the feeder ever since, for reminding me that it is the sturdy shoes that happily endure, those ground-gripper truths that reassure us that with the champagne comes tuna noodle surprise for dinner. The old dog is fed or she makes your life miserable. The familiar bank teller hands you a congratulatory flower the next morning and tells you that you're overdrawn. Evidence of life, both the magic and the muck of it. After all, the muse whispers to me, you were a full-blown adult, a wife and mother, long before you ever became a writer. Just what is the magic, the literature, or the life from which it grows? Sarah Plain and Tall grew out of these same experiences, what my mother used to call the heroics of a common life. When Julius Lester praises children's literature as the literature that gives full attention to the ordinary, he echoes my parents' belief that it is the daily grace and dignity with which we survive that children most need and wish to know about in books. My parents believed in the truths of literature, and it was my mother who urged me to read a book and find out who you are. For there are those of us who read or write to slip happily into the characters of those we'd like to be. It is, I believe, our way of getting to know the good and bad of us, rehearsing to be more humane, revising our lives in our books, as John Gardner wrote, so that we won't have to make the same mistakes again. My father and I played out daily scenes in the cloaks of characters, engaging in extended plots that we changed as we wished, more rehearsal. It was a safe way to bump up against life, and exciting, because my father always invited questions and disagreement. Our plots could make you cry, and I don't mean tears of joy. His enthusiasm, coupled with my mother's incredible tolerance for the eccentricities and subtleties of people, particularly children, meant that I could risk being a rascal. And I was, like the horse Jack in Sarah Plain and Tall. It is the essence of my parents' acceptance reflected in the character of Anna and Caleb's father when he complains that Jack was feisty in town. "Rascal," murmured Papa, smiling, "because no matter what Jack did, Papa loved him." My mother told me early on about the real Sarah, who came from the coast of Maine to the prairie to become a wife and mother to a close family member. My mother remembered her fondly. "Is that real?" demanded a schoolchild. "Just what are the facts?" This is the question most asked by children, I suppose, because part of childhood is concerned with sorting out the facts from the fiction, both truths of life. Recently in Pittsburgh, I was confronted by some heretofore unknown facts. While reading some children's comments, I saw the following. Question: what is the Newbery Medal? Answer: it is for telling the best joke. It looks like a tomato. It is a tomato. Question, who is Patricia McLaughlin? Answer, she is famous because she had a baby on the Brooklyn Bridge. I, too, am still trying to sort out facts for myself, though with little luck. I've noticed, said a friend recently, that you don't pay much attention to facts. They are not, she added, of great importance to you. I confess to this. Facts are like an oil painting which begins with a figure and soon succumbs to layers of paint, so that the original is lost underneath. Facts are, for me, close to what the writer Harriet Dorr describes as memories in Stones for Ibarra, when she writes that memories are like corks left out of bottles. They swell. They no longer fit. I will believe anything, fact or fiction, if it's written or told well, as Jane Yolen will tell you. She called me once to read a passage she was writing about a dragon giving birth, laying its eggs in the sand. Tell me if this works for you, she said. After she read, I was incredulous. I didn't know dragons laid eggs, I said. I thought they had live young. There was silence. Patty, she said, dragons are imaginary. Oh, it works, I muttered. So the fact of Sarah was there for years, though the book began, as books often do, when the past stepped on the heels of the present, or backward, when something now tapped something then. Two of my children began to prepare to leave home for college, first one, then the other. But before they left, my parents took us on a trip west to the prairie, where they and I had been born. It was a gift for all of us, for the children to see a land they had never seen, to know family they had never met, to stand on the vast North Dakota farm where my father had been born in a sod house, and, as Anna observes, the prairie reached out and touched the places where the sky came down. Maya Angelou said recently that when Thomas Wolfe said you can't go home again, he was right, but he was also wrong, for you can't really ever leave either. It was a startling connection from the past to open the door of the granary, the only building still standing, and find a gopher filling his cheeks with grain. But mostly it was an important and poignant connection for my mother, who was, because of Alzheimer's disease, beginning to lose her memory. How splendid if memories swell like corks out of a bottle! How cruel when they diminish and disappear! First there is no more present, then there is no past. At last, there are no more words. Words, 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 complained a frustrated young writer in a letter to me. Is that all writers have? Yes and no. Sarah speaks for me and my mother, for whom there are few words left, when she writes in the book, my brother William is a fisherman, and he tells me that when he is in the middle of a fog-bound sea, the water is a color for which there is no name. This is my favorite sentence in the book, and I know why. It makes an attempt to say what I have always thought and only been able to say in Sarah's voice, that words are limiting, an odd thing for a writer to say. There is an entire world, complex and layered and full, behind each word or between words, that is often present but not spoken. And it is often what is left unsaid that shapes and empowers a moment, an experience, a book, or a life. Actors know this. Musicians know it, too. When I began Sarah, I wished for several things and was granted something unexpected. Most of all, I wished to write my mother's story with spaces like the prairie, with silences that could say what words could not. I began the story as a picture book, and it is clear to me that I wanted to wrap the land and the people as tightly as I could and hand this small piece of my mother's past to her in a package as perfect as Anna's sea stone, as Sarah's sea. But books, like children, grow and change, borrowing bits and pieces of the lives of others to help make them who and what they are. And in the end, we are all there, my mother, my father, my husband, my children, and me. We gave my mother better than a piece of her past. We gave her the same that Anna and Caleb and Sarah and Jacob received, a family. One day, when my mother still had words in her, we went for a drive in the country. We talked. Suddenly, my mother reached out to touch my arm. Now, who are you? She asked. I am your daughter, I said. Ah, she said, leaning back and smiling. Then isn't it nice that I like you? Now I hope you can see why I am enormously pleased and honored to accept this award for this book. Thank you.